With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Madman
and talk about it.
So excited for you to listen to another wonderful episode of the best podcast in the world. We are just the best.
At least ever since Club Random disbanded.
Unfortunately, Club Random took our spot because sometimes, you know, we gotta give our hats off to a show about a 70-year-old man being like, "So do you really hawk Tua on that thing? That make me horny in weird way. I don't have a family. I have this house instead of family." New rule.
When I pay a prostitute to be my friend, I needed to laugh at my joke.
When I have a house instead of family, someone has to hawk Tua on my thing. That guy deserves to be publicly executed. Please give us 5 stars and a review on all of the podcast apps. I know you're getting tired of me saying it, and you guys are making your voices heard loud and clear. Every time I ask, someone says this.
Don't make me do something I don't want to do.
Well, I'm going to, because you must. It is how you pay for the podcast if you are indeed not paying for it.
Wow, and you better pay for it.
You should.
Come on.
But if you're someone who's...
Come on, please.
Yeah, please. I'm saying this like I'm like demanding, but you have all the leverage because you have the money. And we'd like some of that.
Once you get the money, then you get the power.
Then when you get the power, then you get the women. Once you get the women, then you get the Club Random. Oh, do you ever spit on dicks? I'm old. Shut up. Die. To the wall with ye. We would love it if you guys decided to, instead of listening for free like a bunch of freeloading fat fucking piggies, if you decided to, like gentlemen hogs, go to patreon.com/frogcast and sign up, and you know, you get the episodes a week early, plus you get a weekly bonus episode of the Frotcast. It is this podcast, but not about Mad Men. Okay. Today, we're going to be talking about The Mountain King, Season 2, Episode 12. And
is that mountain like M-O-U-N-T-A-I-N or M-O-U-N-T-I-N?
Mountain as in like what I do to your mother.
Oh.
Every
dang
night.
Dang it. My empire is crumbling.
Yeah, now I'm fucking your mom. Today we're talking about that episode about Mountain, Vince's mom, and
I like to think of the first time listener listening to all this stupid banter being like, boy, I can't wait for them to talk about Mad Men.
I hope they have some thoughts about Donald Draper.
I hope they have some good trivia about the show.
Matthew Weiner, and then we're in here, we're like, more like Wiener, yum 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 yum. Then we're filleting. You know, miming fellatio. So our guest is, you know him, you love him. He is the, he is a comedian, and he is, of course, the producer of Pod Yourself a Gun, which is this podcast's actual name. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, please welcome Brent Fleiber.
Oh, new rule, babe. Today the producer is the guest. New rule, babe.
New rule. You know what's weird about him? I mean, a lot of things, but also, like, what did you just, like, steal Dennis Miller's act but make it less smart? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think that every comic in the 80s was sort of trying to do, like, a Johnny Carson impression.
Yeah, I guess that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's what that is. That's them doing Johnny Carson.
Dennis Miller was doing Johnny Carson?
I don't know. This is Vince's theory, it sounds like.
I think a little bit, yeah. I mean, in his own way.
Is it like the movement? It's the movement of the head that goes ha-chi-cha-chi-cha-chi-cha, right? That's the... Is that what Carson
I think it's
did?
The smug, like, grin after the punchline. The,
yeah.
You know.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I guess so. They all do that, but what's weird is that, like, Dennis Miller... Listen, I probably disagree with Dennis Miller's politics to this day. I'm sure he has not changed. But what's weird is that, like, it feels like Dennis Miller at some point, like, opted out of this brand.
Did he?
I mean, I don't know. When do you ever see Dennis Miller?
I don't. Yeah, I was just going to ask, like, when you became a neocon because of 9/11, does
right.
that mean you have to be a never-Trumper now? Like, is he like...
I don't know. It's a great question.
Is he working for the Bulwark? Or yeah. what's he up to?
Yeah. We don't know any of Dennis Miller's opinions anymore, and I think it's maybe for the best.
That's true.
You're
yeah.
most likely right about that.
I bet the thought of a soy latte pisses him off.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know for sure.
I bet he wants a coffee-flavored coffee.
Oh, and don't get him started on non-binaries.
Oh, then the big Q and NyQuil. These are Dennis Leary jokes. But for some reason, like, Dennis Leary is someone whose politics I don't know beyond, like, I think he venerates firefighters, which, fine. That's good. But, like, I love his brand of 90s comedy. So I just...
I can't separate his politics from him being Irish.
Oh, well, so what does that mean? It could mean a lot of things. He's Irish-American, so we really, truly don't know his politics.
I don't know. It's just that I feel like Boston dads always seem like reactionaries, but, like, sometimes they're not.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it could be. You never know. But all I know is I hate Bill Maher, and I just did an episode of a new podcast called I Hate Bill Maher, where Will Weldon goes through every single episode of Real Time with Bill Maher. And I'm like, oh, shit, that's like the most, like, I thought our rewatch podcast was a slog.
Yeah. Why would you do that to yourself?
Yeah, it's great. But, Brent, what's your favorite ad?
Okay, favorite ad. I thought about this. So last time I said it was the Eagle Hardware ad with Edgar Martinez. I stand behind that.
That's right.
Second favorite ad. I got a second favorite and an honorable mention. Second favorite is Bob Wee Outta Baby Eats a Boy.
Oh.
Are you familiar with this?
That sounds vague. That lives on the edge of my consciousness.
It was a collect call commercial, right? Exactly.
Yes.
It's a commercial. I didn't realize it was for Geico Direct, which is, I think, Geico used to do long distance phone
Damn,
stuff.
That's crazy.
But yes, it's a man in the hospital.
They pivoted a lot before the gecko took over.
Yeah, exactly.
A man in the hospital calls collect and says, like, who may I ask is calling? And he says his name is Bob. We at a baby eats a boy. And then you see someone on the other end saying, oh, Bob at a baby, it's a boy.
I do remember that. Yes, I remember that.
Now. I have that right here. Hold on 1 second. This is from the 90s. Dude, look at this. This is great. Here it is.
Operator, I'd like to make a collect call, please. First name, Bob. Last name is... We Auto Baby Eats a Boy.
Hello?
Collect call for Mr. Bob. We Auto Baby Eats a Boy.
Sorry, wrong number.
Who's that, dear?
Bob. They had a baby. It's a boy.
Great commercial. I mean,
it's classic. Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's going to be hard to explain to anyone under 37 that
point.
Like one of the most popular genres of commercial once upon a time was different collect call 1-800 numbers that you could use when you didn't have money at a payphone.
Right.
Different numbers you could dial before you dialed the number you wanted to dial so that it was cheaper.
Right. Well, it was so a payphone would. In fact, charge the person who you're calling rather than you.
Yeah, you didn't have to have the change.
Right.
It's 1-800.
Yes. And so, I mean, of its time, no one knows what it is. And what you just saw there, I love that we're explaining this to our listeners as if I have never seen the demographics of the people who listen to this podcast.
Hey, Matt, you say that, but like one of the recent comments was that someone who has been saying "was up" their whole life and didn't know it was from a beer commercial.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's so good. See, that makes me feel good. That means we have one Gen Z guy who's just like, I love when these old dudes talk about Mad Men. That rules.
They must remember it. They were there.
Yeah. This is like their time. This is when they were born, right?
They're so full of knowledge and anti-inflammatories.
So in order to not even pay for the collect call, the one message they would play, it would say, like, you have a collect call from, and then you had, like, 3 seconds to say your name, and in that 3 seconds, you'd be like, hi, it's Matt, pick me up, I'm at the park.
So I got arrested for shoplifting, come get me.
Yeah. I'm in jail, help. And yeah, so that was what that was a play on, which is, that's a lot of fun, you know? Mm-hmm. That's a great commercial. And but this is not a podcast about a time when collect calls were everywhere, I don't think. No, this is a podcast about Mad Men. And we cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Here it is. Mad yourself, man. Not always said you'd be a chosen madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Blue moon in your eye. Mad yourself, man. Mad yourself, man. Mad.
Hell yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, we're going to be talking about from season 2 of Mad Men, episode 12, The Mountain, Vince's mom. I'm the king.
Oh, not again.
I did it again. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis? Well, you just make it up. You don't have to look it up. Make it up off the top of your head. Do some work.
Never.
Ask ChatGPT. That's the future, by the way. Is when you just ask ChatGPT for everything. Have you guys seen this? Have you heard about this?
Never heard of it.
Oh. Well, I'll just make it up off top because it's not coming up.
Use
not
your brain.
Not even from ChatGPT. Yeah. Joan has a wild time with her new fiance. No.
That bad start.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Bad start. Okay. Start again. Oh, my God. Just make it up off the top of your fucking head. I can't believe you.
No, I don't want to remember.
I'll do it.
I got it.
All right.
Don renews his acquaintance with an old friend. Pete's personal problems impact a major account, and Joan introduces her fiance to the office staff.
I'm going to be mad at you every time you read a goddamn internet synopsis of it.
Why?
Because you can do it. You use your brain. Use your brain.
I'm thinking about the fucking news machine.
I know, but come on, man. Don goes L.A., meets hot girl. She's cool. Betty has her period, I think. And Peggy gets new office. Suck it, Paul. There we go. All right. Anyways, but Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode was set in?
Yes, I think, you know, we cannot evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context. So we like to put some of that context back in with a little segment that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent. That's news, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going all the way back to October 19th, 1962. Mm. One of the top stories.
Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Nope, that was 1492.
Oh, man, that was a while ago.
Watson and Crick and Wilkins. I feel like they never mentioned Wilkins. They got the Nobel Prize for discovering the structure of the DNA molecule. You remember that from science class, I bet.
I don't remember the names of the people who did it, but I do remember that someone at some point discovered the the Helix thing.
Were those the guys who did acid? Is that just a thing that people who do drugs say, that the people who discovered DNA
did acid?
They were on acid.
It was the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I always heard Watson and Crick, and Wilkins was never a part of the
equation. He's like the third man on the moon, the one we don't talk about, whose name is just like Greg or whatever.
New York. The magical boss molecule of life, whose coded blueprints give the recipes for every living thing's physical makeup.
It's me, the boss. Go ahead.
You have Parkinson's.
Yeah. Hey, you know, maybe something happened to you, like one of your eyes is green, one of your eyes is blue. And you got eczema.
Is at last yielding its secrets as a result of the work of three scientists who won the Nobel Prize yesterday. Their probing of the mysterious DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, brought the Nobel Award in Medicine and Physiology to 34-year-old Harvard University professor James D. Watson with British biochemists Francis H. Crick and Morris H. Wilkins, 45. Watson, Crick, and Wilkins will receive $16,681 at the award ceremonies in Stockholm, Sweden on December 10th.
How much money?
$16,681.
I just want to point out, 666 is right in the middle of there.
Ooh.
No. 16,681. So it's just 66 in the middle there. Sorry.
But, yeah. Oh. But.
2-6 is pretty close.
It's almost there, pretty dude. Close. Wait, hold on. 81? Yeah. What's.
Dude, if you were doing
wait,
acid.
Wait. Yeah. One at the beginning, one at the end, 8. 1 + 1 = 2. 8 - 2 = 6.
666. Yep. You got it. Yep.
I did it. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Another story. Check on
Wait, can, I, can we just real quick? Mm-hmm. Is it actually a double helix? Like
yeah,
when
I think
they
so.
What do you? Can you see that in a microscope?
No, because it's all like folded together or something. I don't remember, dude. You're asking
just,
me stuff from high school science class.
That's crazy if it's like we got them little spirals up in our shit. Mm-hmm. Little spiral ladders.
Your shit's all spiraled.
Yeah.
Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. A Czech United Nations diplomat who killed his wife and then led police on a chase through three states died today at St. Luke's Hospital from a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
I guess he wasn't
in the hospital.
I know he lasted for a while, huh?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Carol Ziska shot himself in the head yesterday at the end of a wild 125-mile chase at speeds up to 110 miles per hour.
I guess he didn't have diplomatic immunity from bullets. I bet someone said that at his funeral.
Yep. The attaché was speeding from the Czech UN mission in New York, where he had killed his wife earlier in the day when his automobile careened off the highway near Easton, Pennsylvania.
Wait, slow down. He was already driving and he shot himself?
The attaché where he killed
How
his
does your, automobile. Or did he get into a car accident and go, I don't have insurance, fuck
I
it.
Think he killed himself and sped off and flew off the highway, yes.
Wait, no, that doesn't make sense. Okay. So you're saying he was driving full speed and then he shot himself?
When a state trooper approached the wrecked car, Ziska pulled out. Oh, he wrecked okay. and then wrecked.
And then, yeah. Okay, the, that makes so much more sense.
The trooper fired a shot, hitting the diplomat in the shoulder. Ziska then turned his own gun on himself and fired a shot into his head.
See, that's interesting, too, because I'm just like, well, I mean, if you're already set on dying, go out in a gun battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the apparently crazed Czech caused constant. Sorry, I like how they're still enjoying the alliteration, even though it's like a very dark story.
Yeah.
The apparently crazed Czech caused consternation among fellow diplomats.
What are they doing?
Oh my god!
What are they doing?
When the body of his wife Vera, 40, clad in a nightgown, was found sprawled in the floor of their apartment in the mission in New York. In her head was a bullet. Sorry, it's
in her head, a bullet
fired from the same German pistol Ziska later pointed at a Pennsylvania state trooper. Also found in the disheveled apartment was a note indicating his intention of committing suicide. It read in part, "I think I am crazy." Well, it's kind of weird to only quote that part of the note. I feel like there was a lot more there. That
yeah,
was
it'd be
more important, but
weird to just write, I think I am crazy, and then put her like on a post-it note onto the refrigerator.
Well, at first I read that. I was like, well, that's a funny little suicide note. But now I realize it said it read in part. So like they just didn't quote the rest of it.
Yeah.
It's probably just a bunch of crazy stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I eat my own doo-doo. I put a needle in my penis. I think I'm crazy. I shoot my wife.
I just feel like they wrote a lot of stories with panache in the 60s, and this one is another good example from the Miami Herald headline. I don't think my wife meant to drown baby. Howard Williams said Thursday he thought his common-law wife was temporarily insane when she drowned their daughter in a bathtub Tuesday. Quote, I don't think she meant to do it, said Williams, 38. She almost always got overwrought when she was pregnant. Loretta?
Loretta? I mean, this sounds like postpartum, so I agree with him.
Well, okay.
Well, she meant to do it, but in a state of postpartum depression, you know what I mean?
Okay, well, there's a reason why I don't think that's true. That
oh, did the baby say something racist?
Loretta Elaine Williams, 24, was in jail Thursday, charged with first-degree murder. The only thing I know to do, said Williams, is push to get a psychiatric exam for her. If she was responsible, he said, I'd want her to get the full extent of the law. It was a terrible, terrible thing. But I can't hold any malice against anybody who's not responsible. The death of his 4-year-old daughter, Cheryl Lynn.
That's older than I expected.
Yep. Yeah. Knocked Williams out of work Thursday. He was fired from his job as a mechanic at Coral Gables Garage, 4200 Laguna Street.
Wait, they fired him?
Mm-hmm. After? I can't blame. Yeah.
Because he had to run out because his wife just drowned his daughter?
Yep. I can't blame my boss, he said.
All right, what are you doing now, buddy?
this guy is too passive.
There's like, listen, I understand being Christian or whatever, but like, you know, come on. There's sometimes you got to blame somebody.
They cater to the Cadillac trade, the higher branch, and everybody was coming in asking, is that Howard Williams who works here? Williams said he had 2 or 3 prospects for another job, but added, as soon as this thing's cleared up, I think I'll move out of Florida. Right now, it's what you'd call stinko. When it blows over, I'll clear out.
This guy is very chill. Maybe
pretty stinko when your wife drowns your 4-year-old in a bathtub.
Yeah, the news comes up to you, and you got fired because of it. How do you feel? Everything is pretty stinko over here.
My statement, P.U. P-U. My last week, P.U. I got to take a shower and move.
And when I got the call, I said to myself, rats.
Loretta is currently pregnant by Williams for the 10th time in 6 years. The child.
Okay. See that a little bit there explains the wife at least.
Yeah.
10 pregnancies in how many years?
6, which I don't even know how that's possible. I'm assuming there are
lots of miscarriages. Ugh, this is it's a pretty dark story, but
I have a happier one.
Kind of stinko, you know what?
Yeah, real quick.
We're gonna call that one stinko.
Also, you just know that when he moved, he didn't take any of those kids with him.
Yeah, definitely not. He probably drowned a few of them himself.
Well, he hasn't moved yet. He's planning to.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, they're in Florida. He could always just like let them get eaten by alligators somehow.
That's true.
True.
Probably easier than. Anyways, Vin, what's the other story?
One more. Hand control car stolen from crippled salesman.
Hand control. Oh, okay. I got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Police reported no luck Thursday in locating a specially equipped car stolen Wednesday night from a crippled shoe salesman. That's hard to say.
I thought you were going to say sous chef.
Same.
Yeah. Harry Deal, 40, said his car was taken from the parking lot at Park Lane Cafeteria while he was having supper. The car was a 1958 Chevrolet convertible with hand controls. Pull up for gas, pull down for the brakes, said Deal.
Okay.
Deal, who gets around in a wheelchair, said he had no idea who took his car. Maybe somebody who got a bum pair of shoes, he speculated. Maybe their feet hurt and they're getting even.
Okay, so this is obviously, I think anyone can do anything. But also, it is very funny that he's a shoe salesman. I mean, it was like, are these shoes comfortable? Well, I don't know. I've been told that.
I mean, I feel like
I got no complaints.
They definitely gave him that job as a bit, so he could just keep doing that joke over and over.
They certainly look good. They certainly look good. I wouldn't say that they're the most comfortable, as my feet do change colors, various purples and blues. Sorry, this is, what are we doing? I hope he got his car back and he forgives me for those jokes.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah, that's another guy who was very nonchalant about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously a less severe crime, but he's kind of cracking wise, like, I sold him bad shoes. Yeah. Oh, well.
Maybe I wasn't stranded. I got wheels on my chair.
Yeah, that guy's, like, compared to the other guys, not as bad, but it's bad.
Yeah, well, things are stinko in Florida is what you need to remember. Yeah,
absolutely.
Some things change, some things stay the same.
That's,
you know?
Right. Two in the pinko, one in the stinko. You know what I mean. Vince, you keep muting yourself over and over on Zoom.
I'll mute you.
I don't know why. So that's what's going on in 1962. We got paraplegics selling shoes. We got husbands forgiving job their bosses for firing them because their baby died. And we
imagine not wanting to blame your boss for firing you when your wife drowns your child in the tub.
I think literally the law blames your boss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, at least there would have to be like a grace period.
Dude, I would sue. I don't mean to, you know, tell tales out of school, but I think I would be like, lawyer time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get some money. Okay, so today I have only a little bit of today's Draper D story, and it sucks. But I don't know why this season, despite yelling at everyone that I wasn't going to do a song every episode, I have done a song every episode. Mm-hmm. And so here's another one. Enjoy. Here's a little bit of it.
E12 season 2. Betty's feeling blue. Buy Sally some shoes. Daddy won't be back soon.
Won't be back soon.
They're having marital trouble.
It's really bad, and I'm going to mix it.
It's really good.
I'm going to mix it. It's going to sound a little bit more normal. But you can listen to that song at the very end of the episode. All right. Let's talk about the Mountain King. It is the penis ultimate episode of season 2, right before the finale. Vince, tell me, what are your general thoughts?
This episode ends with Don Draper walking into the ocean. He's finally made it out to California. And, you know, like I said, Don is America. This episode is about the end of the frontier. Because conquering new territory, it used to be what American men did instead of go to therapy.
Men will literally do Manifest Destiny instead of going to therapy.
Now it's all gone. And, you know, Don, like America, he's forced to do some introspection. He doesn't really like what he sees, I don't think. But, you know, I think it's mostly a bridge episode. A lot of the storylines don't really, like, finish off. But it also, it gives us more of Anna Draper, who is one of my favorite Mad Men characters. And I think it's interesting for that alone, even if I do wonder whether Matthew Weiner stole the idea of a wise one-legged blonde lady from The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, he was a writer on the show.
Yeah.
He didn't.
But I like that maybe that was his thing. Like, he was always trying to shoehorn a one-legged
blonde lady. He's always pitching.
Yeah, in the pitch meetings. He's like, so I was thinking a new character. Is it a one-legged hot blonde woman again? Yes, but this one's different.
Yes.
But this one's different.
This one's not Russian.
Yes, yeah. But.
She has both her legs, just one of them doesn't work. Okay? Yeah, Brent, what did you think of this?
Is that episode? Was that the deal? Is one of her legs just not like functioning?
Yeah, yeah, she has a bum leg.
I don't know the medical term, but I would call it wonky.
Yeah, yeah, she has a wonky leg. She's a Willy Wonkified leg.
Yeah, she could one of them
stinko. Do that. Yeah, stanky leg dance yeah, really well.
She's
though.
Doing the stinko leg. Great dance move.
I thought this episode, it was fine as far as Mad Men episodes go. I think one thing I've noticed, you know, when I'm trying not to compare it to
well, you, Sopranos you're always saying that you love much. Any episode with
is Vince, is it that you want him to work harder? Is it that you want him to do more editing? Is that what it is? Stop yourself. You know you can.
I didn't say it. That's just what
what are you
always say on our Slack channel.
All right, all right. Take
two. Be saying that.
Take two. Brent, what were you saying?
You can't keep that one.
What come on, man.
We'll see. We'll see how it
we'll
comes
see.
Together.
Jesus Christ.
I'm trying not to compare it to The Sopranos too much, but I think one thing I've noticed in this rewatch of Mad Men is if you just drop in on an episode, it's not as satisfying. I think almost every Sopranos episode stands alone really well.
Yes.
This is a classic yeah. Mad Men episode that if you were to just drop in, you'd be like, "Who? What is this?
Yeah.
I don't understand. What popsicles? What are we talking about here?"
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, that like there's some good laughs, there's some truly not fun scenes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. But overall, it was fine.
I feel like this show usually does a good job about not being about like the magic of advertising, but like if you just dropped in on this one, you could come away thinking like, "Wow, advertising is really smart and good."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose so. I feel like the focus on the popsicle stuff, they limited it to two scenes, and so for that I was grateful. Other than that, I didn't get much of magic of advertising. Instead, what I did get, like,
I say that acknowledging that I do enjoy the ad pitches on the show. Generally.
I do too. But it all kind of depends on its relation to pushing the story forward. And in this case, the story it pushes forward is Peggy.
Yeah, she gets a new office.
She gets a new office out of it. She gets some confidence, and it also
she's officially surpassed Joan. Basically.
Yes,
yeah,
and it also develops the. Weirdly, this is like Kenny gets a lot of development in a very short period of time, which I really like. In the pitch meeting for the popsicles. Peggy's talking about how, you know, my mom would always take a popsicle and cut it in half so we could each get one. And he's just like, "Sounds cheap. Is this some sort of Catholic thing?" and while they're like, you know, pitching this, you know, kind of cute, beautiful idea, he just keeps being like, "In Vermont, we make ice cream. It sucks." It's just like, yeah. Oh, that's right. Kenny kind of sucks too. Because, yeah. You know, he's been... sort of the, I don't know, more sensitive one. He's the one who does art. You know, he's yeah. a good writer.
I think it's trying to speak to that feeling when you meet someone who has all of your same opinions about movies, but then they actually suck as
right.
a person. And you're like, oh no, what does that mean for me?
Yeah. Am I him? Yeah. I'm going to kill myself, but only after the cop shoots me in the shoulder. Call back to news. Anyways, I thought this
somebody better check on this guy.
Yeah, this guy's stinko.
He's check.
Yeah. I get it.
Did you get it?
Yeah. So
subtitle that joke plays better in subtitles.
It sure doesn't. So I kind of agree with what both of you guys are saying about this sort of being a bridge episode, not really standalone, but this is the first Anna Draper like deep dive episode. Like we see Anna Draper, I think, for the first time in either the previous episode or two episodes ago, as you know, the woman who comes into the car dealership and is just like, "You're not Don Draper," and you're like, "Oh shit, who's this?" And finally we get some Anna Draper, which I love and think she's a wonderful character. Having said that, I am watching the show with new eyes every time. And my newest feeling about Anna Draper's character is that they wrote a really cool girl. And Anna Draper in this
pretty much.
She is wonderful. Don't get me wrong. And I do think she's kind of necessary, but she very much is like what a misogynist thinks like a really cool girl is. What I mean by that is, like, she gave Don his life.
It's kind of like, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Have you seen True Romance?
I have seen True Romance.
I mean, it's a great movie, and, like, the first time you see it, you're like, oh, man, what a great character Patricia Arquette is. And
right.
Then you watch it again, and you're like, okay, this is funny, like, but almost in a Tommy Wiseau way of,
yes.
like, this is... This
Very
is,
revealing.
This is so revealing about, like, what Quentin Tarantino thinks, like, a cool girl would look like.
Yes,
know?
Yeah. One who just keeps complimenting you and letting you do a bunch of shit.
Yes.
Whatever you want.
Yes, and that's kind of Anna Draper's character in this. You know, Anna Draper, you first see her in a flashback. Basically, he's trying to lie to her. I'm not Don Draper. And she's like, cut the shit. You're lying to me. And he finally breaks down and admits it. We then flash to the present. And for the entirety of the episode, her vibe is, hey, do you want any food? What about some clothes? Oh, you can come here and use me as a therapist literally whenever you want.
Yeah, just show up whenever.
Just show up whenever.
I don't have anything going on.
I don't have anything going on, and I just want you to be happy. Guy who I know because he stole my dead husband's identity. And
another flaw of this, I feel like there are a couple times when I wasn't entirely sure whether it was a flashback and it didn't seem intentional.
Right.
I enjoy 50s fashion in this in the same way I do, like, in some scenes in Back to the Future. Like, I feel like 1950s fashion is based on, like, what if a cowboy came to the end of a cattle ride and he suddenly had, like, $100 in his pocket? It's like, oh, a cowboy bought himself a suit. Look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, you're not wrong. There is something romantic about the style. At least, you know, when Don Draper's doing it, obviously, it just looks fantastic. And the scene where he's, like, near the hot rods and, like, talking.
Couldn't tell if that was a flashback at first.
So I don't think it was a flashback.
It wasn't.
No, it was a flashback, wasn't
no,
it?
No, it wasn't.
No.
Okay. All right. No.
I had to go to the trivia page to discover that.
Right. And he's like, you know, talking about like being, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm looking for a job and stuff like that. And so I wasn't sure what was going on. But what I loved about it was just I wanted him to like stand and talk to cool guys like all day about cars. And I love that the way he easily blends in with those dudes, like, you know, these are car guys, you know, they've got fucking oil all over their shit and whatnot, but they're all beefy and hot. And I was just like, yeah, Don, do this. This seems like a happy life for you.
He doesn't know anything about cars. I guess he would just have
to. He would learn it in a second. He's fucking his DNA. You know that his shit would fucking, he would know immediately.
I think that's such a classic like 38-year-old man thing to do. Just be like, maybe I'm a car guy. Yeah. Maybe I've been a car guy this whole time and I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
You guys want to teach me?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was sort of sad.
No, for sure. Yeah. You're not wrong about that, but I think like the way I was sort of looking at it was that he spends all day surrounded by you know, like other like snakes in suits, trying to please you know, clients and all that stuff. And he was just like, what if my life was hanging out with my bros and trying to build the fastest car? And like, yes, it is a little midlife crisis-y, but it's also, I don't know, it's kind of beautiful. And I love the way everyone looked.
I sort of relate it to like our generation a little bit.
Yes, 100%.
Because our generation is the last, like, cars, if you grew up in like between the 30s through the 70s, like cars represented freedom because that was where you went to like go make out with girls and get away from your house. And so everybody sort of knew things about cars and like how they worked and stuff. And that was for us, that was like the internet. And so for a long time, like the assumption was always that every generation is going to be better at computers than their parents. But now like you talk to Zoomers and they're like, we are with cars. They're like, I don't know how that shit works. I don't know how to convert a PDF. Like our generation is like the last one that still sort of remembers like how that technology worked, even if we didn't, you know, work on it professionally.
Sure.
And it's, I don't know. It's an interesting parallel that I think about every time there's car culture stuff in the 50s and 60s.
Right. Yeah. Cause there was a time when you had to figure out on your own how to, you know, like use these
change
tools.
Your oil.
Yeah. And right. And like, yeah, change your oil. You had to learn your own car because, you know, that was the just how it was, and you had to like know how to do shit on the computer because it was at a time before every single thing on the computer wasn't automated under one fucking like, you know, app or whatever. I still really like the episode, so let's get into what had happened. We open with Betty. She is signing over Dawn's checks to herself. She pulled out his check and endorsed it. She forges Dawn's signature, very very much like a woman does. You see, in this episode there is cool girls and then there's women, and she represents women. High five. So she goes downstairs. She's trying to smoke a cigarette, and she finds Sally has taken her lighter and is smoking a cigarette herself in the bathroom. And Sally gets pushed into a closet and yelled at. And it turns out that she was doing it to act out because she's like, "Where's my papa?"
And yeah, but I do like the idea that in the 60s, when you were mad at a kid, you could just shove him in a closet and be like, yeah, you have to stay there now.
Yeah, yeah. Now you have to smoke the whole pack inside this closet and die of carbon monoxide poisoning. Yeah,
you're just lucky I didn't drown you in the bathtub.
That's right.
Like that woman in Pennsylvania.
I was thinking of it. I was going to.
We'll see who's Stinko now.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the closet, Sally reveals why she's acting out because Dad's not there. You know, you're the one who made him leave. And Betty has this look, you know, disappointed look, like, is that what you think? And she says it in a way like that's not exactly correct. Like that, and it's very funny to me because in that moment I realize she's like really spent almost no time trying to convince the kids of a like reasonable,
plausible,
plausible story.
She's stuck. She's like, of course she's gonna come off the bad guy because she can't be like, well, listen,
right,
kids, it's because your dad was fucking another woman. Like, there's no scenario in there where she doesn't end up looking like the bad guy to her kids. I mean, I guess if she just laid it out for them in horrific detail, like maybe,
well,
she wouldn't.
I agree, but also she is like, she hasn't even really tried to keep up some sort of lie.
No, yeah.
I feel like Dawn did the heavy lifting of the lies and she immediately like jumped on him for it. Like, oh, did you just think that up right now? And then he's just like, or I could just come home. And so like, you know, he's blessed her with this lie, you know, in order to keep her kids, you know, in the dark about this. And then in this moment she's like, oh, you guys didn't buy it, this thing that I'm barely selling.
Yeah, well, that's kind of Betty's whole thing, is that she doesn't realize that other people aren't as good at lying to themselves and compartmentalizing as she is, which I think is that's sort of the whole phone call with her friend.
Yeah,
Which I didn't even realize that was the same person. I don't know if she just looked different in that scene, but I was like, who is this person?
It's been too long since we saw that lady. I had to take a second on that one, too.
Yeah. But anyway, Betty obviously engineered like a lunch where this woman and the horse guy were going to be alone together because she knew this woman had a crush on the horse guy. And now she's like yelling at the lady for having sex with him because, like, in her world, like, yes, obviously you flirt and then don't do anything about it because you've practiced self-denial for your whole life.
Also, she wanted to sort of live vicariously through her. I mean, that's the thing.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Arthur
is that she wanted she wanted to fuck this guy and she couldn't bring herself to do it.
Well,
and now she's mad at everyone involved.
Or her wanting to live vicariously through that was like she wanted to like flirt vicariously through this woman, and then when this woman actually like took the next step and potentially blew up her family, she's like, well, now I can't live vicariously through that. It's not fun anymore.
Right. Yeah. And also it's not my fault. And I can just hang up this phone and literally nothing will happen. So yeah, it's like, this does not affect me actually. Yeah. It's interesting. It's hard to tell whether or not she engineered for like this to happen out of spite, knowing that this was going to happen. I don't think so. I think, you know, there's kind of this, well, here's the phone call between Betty and the horse lady.
Oh, Betty, I made a terrible mistake.
You did?
Don't act surprised. He told me all the things you said about me.
I love the "you did," she says, like with like a breathy "you did," where she's like kind of touching herself a little bit.
Tell me about the mistake.
I was grateful.
Why would you do that?
What? You wanted him too. You know you did.
There's a difference between wanting and having.
You did everything you could to encourage me.
I didn't make you do anything.
My God, you're an awful woman, you know that?
No one made you sleep with him.
I love it because she's also yelling at Bobby Barrett a little bit too. You know what I mean? Mm. Like she's mad at anyone who would dare sleep with a married man. And part of me is also thinking, like, and this is obviously too far, but she almost engineered a situation in which she could yell at someone for sleeping with Don.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty great. So let's get to the office stuff.
Well, before we do that, do we want to take a break for ads?
Oh my God. Mm. Guys, did you know?
How could you be so crass?
How could that? Did you know that McDonald's is now selling 2 for $3? You can get 2, but only 3. So stick around. I'm having a stroke. And we're back. Turns out it wasn't a stroke. Turns out I was just kidding.
Stroking it.
Stroking it. This is Mad Yourself a Man. We're here with our producer, Brent fucking Flyberg. The flying of the Berg. I almost said Brett Andrew, but I did not because it's not.
Oh, that's right. That's not my name.
It's in your Zoom.
I use a fake name at my like software job.
It's funny that you use a fake name at a job. Usually, that's great. Do you have like an extra social security number and stuff too?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
Dude, you got to get one of those like Mr. Yeah. Donald Draper.
Yeah, I just got to wait till my commanding officer dies in a horrible accident.
Yeah,
it's my fault.
That's every employee's dream.
Yes, in battle, quote unquote.
So before we get off of the Betty storyline.
Oh, we're not really like getting off of it. We're getting on to your mom. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I feel like what keeps this episode from being great, and you know, it's a good episode. I don't think it's a great episode, but I think partly it's like there's a lot of scenes that I don't quite know how to interpret, and one of them is like Betty just getting her period randomly while she's giving
I tell you it was like, for me as someone who was watching this episode in real time developing my Anna Draper is a cool girl theory, to have it Betty simultaneously like an end with a reveal of her being on her period, I was just like, guys, I don't want to say I'm right, but I think I'm right. Like, it is so strange. And you know, I don't remember if this is necessarily foreshadowing of some health issue she's gonna have in the next episode or whatnot. I do know, I remember that she does have health issues at different points in the series, but it was strange.
It's rare that a fictional character bleeds. at some point in the story that it doesn't come up as foreshadowing of a health issue.
Exactly. And so maybe that's what's going on. I don't remember. All I know is that if you take this episode in a vacuum, they're basically just being like, oh, Betty's on her period. That's why she's been such a bitch. It's so weird. But yeah, so so after the phone call with Horse Lady, in which she's chastised for having sex with Horse Man, Betty gives Sally a present, some riding boots, and then is like, now that you are sufficiently buttered up, Don is not actually on a business trip. He's somewhere. I don't know. Kicked him out of the house. I don't know when he's coming back. Sometimes, you know, mommy and daddy fight or whatever. And Sally is like obviously distraught by this, but she's also trying to trust that her mom means it when she says like everything's going to be okay. And then her mom is bleeding. And
yeah, classic.
Don't know.
Yeah, what. I don't know what that was supposed to accomplish, but
all I know is Anna Draper would never.
She would never, dude. She would never ever. This woman, she does not bleed, and if she does, it's just like a little bit. And you know what? During her PMS, she's nicer. She's nicer.
She knows she has her period all calculated out, and yeah, she stays away from society when
exactly
she
when she has her period, she's able physically to put the blood back in so that she's still down for sex anytime, and she so she's so cool. So yeah, that is Betty's storyline in this. At the office, we have two storylines going on. Well, I guess three. So you have Peggy, who is pitching popsicles. You have Pete, who
I'm pitching a popsicle right now.
Yeah, I'm pitching a popsicle thinking about Anna never having blood. And then you have the the merger. You have the merger of Sterling Cooper with Putnam Powell and Loeb, and so is it Loeb or Lowe? Putnam Powell.
I don't know. Loeb sounded right when you said it the first time.
Yeah. Who cares? That's the real answer. So Peggy is sitting around with all the executives, and they're talking about popsicles. And Kenny is like, "You guys sound Catholic." meanwhile, I don't know this character's name. But I've been calling her Wilma Flintstone. This is Pete's secretary, the one who slept with Harry. You know, the redhead.
Is that Midge?
Yeah. Is it Midge?
There's a Midge. No, Midge is Don's
Don's other
mistress,
woman.
Sorry.
Yeah. So I don't know Wilma Flintstone's name, but I do know that I would drop everything to run away with her. I love her, and she makes me go yabba dabba doo. So she is catching Pete up on some, you know, messages, and then mentions that the adoption agency called, and that she's very touched and proud of him for, you know, getting a discarded...
Taking in an abandoned child.
A discarded runt, you know? Just like, you know, those little freaks need homes just like the rest of us. And it's clear Pete didn't know about this appointment or, you know, forgot that it was made, and he is...
I don't know if it's that or if he just doesn't like the idea, or if he's just doing the Don thing where he gets mad when a secretary knows anything about his private life and looks at him as, like, an object of pity, or...
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy that she would say anything, that she would have any sort of comment about that. Like, that is... that. I know that you're taking the call, but that's none of your business. Don't tell him. You know?
I would just, you know, naturally assume something that private is something you would keep to yourself.
You think,
you know, and just be like, oh, this probably is not, you know, something I should say out loud. And maybe at some point, if he talks to me about it, then I'll bring it up. I also think that Wilma has not been the greatest judge of,
you know, she's not great at her job. She just, like, mm-mm. You know, she's great at getting dick down by.
Hey, I think she's probably fine at getting at her job, but also, you know, you can be good at both. Shut up, Vince. That's my wife. So she is hot. Anyways, Cooper's sister is in the office trying to convince Cooper to go through with the merger. Let's keep with Peggy and the wonderful Pete and Trudy storyline. So Pete is super fucking pissed off about this, and he goes home to tell Trudy to give her what for. As
he's like angry Flanders.
It is so funny to watch him be mad, because you can't imagine that anyone other than Trudy would not laugh at it. But Trudy is also kind of like the same, comes from the same culture in a way, yeah. where they both are, it's like they're play acting adults. It's yes. very funny. Here is the scene in which Pete yells at his betrothed.
Peter, you're shouting.
Don't do that. Listen to me very carefully. We are not adopting a child. That's final.
Will you calm down and we can talk
about it? Hell's bells, Trudy! That is final!
Hell's bells.
Hell's bells.
And then he throws a chicken out the window.
Dude,
and
he sure does.
According to Matthew Weiner in the DVD commentary.
What did he say? I thought of that!
No, it's a, okay. Apparently it's a story from David Isaacson told the story of his dad throwing the chicken out of the window. We thought it was too good to pass up. That is a funny story, but also, if I had just roasted an entire chicken and someone threw it out
divorce.
The window, I would be so
divorce. Immediate. Straight to lawyer. No yeah. fucking way, dog. No fucking way.
Mm-hmm. That chicken looked good, and he just tossed it out the window.
Also,
plate and all.
He fucking like lifted it up like he was going to throw it against the wall, but that's like too, I don't know, like ethnic white or something.
Yeah, that's
for
what
him.
Catholics would
that's
do.
That's what a Catholic would do. So instead, he throws it off the balcony, plate and all. Mm-hmm.
Just, we're Episcopalian, and he just throws it on.
Yeah,
throws it on a passerby.
Yeah, I hope it hits a black. You know, but
it's crazy that Pete becomes one of the likable characters.
I know.
Like watching old episodes, it's like the guy who threw the chicken. That's the guy I like.
Yeah,
by the
yeah,
end.
That's my
that's
favorite
crazy.
Guy. What the hell? Yeah, it is. It's an insane scene. He is just like he's done with this, and part of it seems to be like there does seem to be some embarrassment that he has when Wilma Flintstone is like, you know, talking about this because he realizes, you know. He could never have an adopted baby who everyone didn't know was adopted. And like that alone, you
or
know,
thinks that he's less of a man because he like couldn't produce an heir.
Right. Exactly. Right. Because they would know, like he couldn't just have like adopt some white baby and be like, well, people will think it's our baby, you know, biologically. I think it's like he knows that everyone would know it was an adoption, and that emasculates him somehow. It also, like, he's, yes. like, listening to his mother from previous episodes, who's just like, if you have a baby, I'll write you out. If you adopt a baby, I'll write you out of the will. So, yeah.
I think part of it, too, because I never got the impression he really wanted kids.
No.
So yes. I think part of it is that, like, he saw this as an out.
Yes.
Like, well, oh, I guess we can't. Oh, well. And so now he's like, I didn't want. Like, he's yeah. throwing a little fit.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't want baby. Yes. Don't make me buy baby.
Yeah, now we have to buy baby? Oh, boy. Where does it end? First you're buying baby, then you're buying baby clothes. Yeah, it's, like, clear that he is.
Can we adopt one that's already potty trained?
Right. I, you know, part of it also, too, is just, like, you know, God is giving him this gift of him not being able to have children and it not being his fault, and Trudy is doing mm-hmm. everything in her power to fuck up every aspect of that.
Yeah.
Because he could spend the rest of his life childless and just telling people like, well, my sperm are fine. So, you know, this makes him feel like less of a man, and he would have to then tell when people say, oh, you adopted, be like, it's my wife's fault. Like, he'd have to do that for the rest of his life. So he's yeah. really mad about it.
Yeah, and I also wonder if she made the appointment without him knowing. So it's like, yes, it's all happening. Yes, he's like impotent in that way.
Yeah.
Even though the seed is strong, he's still sort of impotent to the will of his wife and family.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes the phone call with his father-in-law, Tom, so like supercharged. And it's also another great scene where like Tom immediately plays the, well, I have the Clearasil account card, you know, immediately is talking about how it's under review, and I have that scene as well.
Why would you do that? Sales have been spectacular.
All right, calm down. I said review, not that we're moving. You'll have 90 days to turn it around.
Turn what around?
You're distracted.
What are we talking about, Tom?
Look, son, every good businessman knows that if his wife's unhappy, his work suffers.
Happy wife, happy life. It's in the worker's manual, you know?
Yes, they seem very directly related in this case, don't they, Tom?
Trudy's happiness should be your first priority.
I think you should pull Clearasil right now.
Oh, he lays down the law on his father-in-law's bitch ass. And he has no issue with it. It seems like this is like sort of an emancipation for him as well. He didn't want to like go begging for this account in the first place because he already owes Trudy kind of everything.
Yeah.
You know, like Trudy basically traded a name for everything else. You know, like, I'll get your name and you get all of my money, my dad's fucking connections at Vic's, you know, all of the
nice uptown apartment.
Yeah, nice uptown apartment, you know. So, like, I think for him, it's just like, you know, him trying to regain sovereignty over his own life or whatever. But yeah, it's really great. Meanwhile, there is over at the office a merger happening. This is a real, like, you know, quick storyline that's gonna, it almost is meant to be fleshed out in the background, but they have the scenes anyways, where you find out that Bert's sister like also owns a huge share of the company, and they all vote to merge with Putnam, Powell, and Loeb, let's say.
Yeah. I didn't really understand the conflict here. What was her? She just didn't want to sell. I didn't.
She
really
wanted
get
to sell.
What
it's Bert didn't did. Want to sell.
Okay.
Yeah, Bert, they're all sort of. Yeah, Bert's the only one on the fence, and really the only one who would have a problem with selling is Don.
Right.
And Don's not there to say anything about it because he's on his vision quest out west.
Yeah.
Right.
And his share is, they were saying, like, irrelevant. But if he'd have been there, oh baby, he would have sold them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know
his
mean?
Whole
That's
deal
his
is
whole
talking
thing.
To people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So he wasn't able to stop it from happening. And so, like, Bert and Roger have a conversation about it, in which Bert is basically saying, like, are we just doing this because you want to marry a teen? And Roger is like, yes, but also, what's the big deal? No, you know, we still get to work here, and we still get to pretend like we do something for a living. You know, that what's the problem? And that's enough to convince Bert Cooper. And they do it. And of course, Bert's sister gets in this great barb at the very end when he talks about what does he say? He's like, this something about your kids, and he's like, oh, you have your children to think of. And he says, I just have the one. And then she just looks at him and it's like, ah, because the other one's gonna be your new wife.
I also liked Sterling telling Bert, I'm the happiest I've ever been, and Bert's just like, well, that's good to know, I guess.
Sick. Sick. Great.
We don't really talk about that kind of stuff around here, but sure.
Yeah, and it's also like apropos of nothing. It's like, by the way, I don't regret this. Okay, that sounds okay, secure. Sure, yeah. Absolutely something a person who's not feeling regret says out loud. And then we got to talk about Joan and Greg, unfortunately. This is one of the darkest storylines so far in a show that has, you know, has had suicide and, cheating, which is one of the worst crimes. So it starts off with Joan's husband and Joan having sex. Hubba hubba yubba yubba. Everything about this gives me a hard like rubber. I wanted it to rhyme, but hard like rubber doesn't work. And so they're having sex, and then she gets on top.
Yeah.
And he
they didn't
is,
do
is that,
that
what it was?
Yeah.
That's what it was?
Yeah.
That, I was
I didn't get it at first either.
It took me a second. I was like, was she doing something with her hands?
Yeah, was she putting a finger in the butt? Because not everyone likes that. You have to ask. You have to ask about that. Sometimes you want to go, okay, I'll do it, but let me clean first just in case. I'm insecure.
So, again, going to the DVD commentary, Matthew Weiner, by Joan climbing on top of Greg, she's showing she's sexually confident. It's not her first rodeo, and it wounds his ego, and it's a cloud hanging over their relationship.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It's just so crazy to think that getting on top in 1962, that was like a slut movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, what?
It is an interesting, well, let me just,
that's still missionary,
right? Let me play the scene here.
What are
here
you doing?
You're tired, let me do the driving.
It's okay. Johnny, stop. You know what, I am tired.
Is something wrong?
Where'd you pick that up?
Greg, stop that. You know there is no before.
So this is a very interesting, because obviously there's like the symbol.
Which man gave you the idea to climb on top of a penis?
Yeah, so obviously there's like the symbolic thing of just like, oh, Greg is uncomfortable with a woman taking control, sexual control, blah, blah, blah. The funniest thing about this is that he's just like, how did you even think to do this?
Yeah.
This is impossible. Who thought of this idea?
Yeah. What man taught you
right,
this?
Yeah.
Did you grow up in France?
Yeah, yeah. Like a man had to teach you that, like, oh, sometimes I like to not just be on my back and lay there. It's just, it is so fucking crazy that for him, he's like, this is indicative of some sort of slut behavior. A woman who
maybe
wants
I
to
thought
be
maybe
on top.
He was mad that she kept her top on during it, because I mean that's kind of like the best part of.
Yeah, no, I'd that's what I'd be mad about. I'd be like, oh, you want to wake up old ding dong? How about dump him out? That's what I would say. I'll tell her to dump. This don't get hard unless milk truck arrives. You better pull in that milk truck. Beep, 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 beep. Back that milk truck into the driveway. Time to drink milk.
Drop the cartons off in the neighborhood.
Yeah, old milkman's here. Time to divvy it up and give it to the neighbors.
Hood cats.
Yeah, we'll get and put it in a saucer. So yes, but symbolically what's happening is that he is incredibly insecure.
Like when you just extend the sex metaphor way beyond any point at which it makes any,
right,
any euphemistic,
like you
sense.
Really have to try. Okay, well the saucer would be, I don't know. So yeah, there's a lot of symbology happening there. And later, Joan and Greg go into the office, and you know, Peggy at this point has just pitched the popsicle guys and gets the fucking, you know, gets the account and is like, hey, I just got the account. Can I have Freddie Rumsen's office? And he's like, yeah, fine. No one else asked. go ahead, which is kind of an incredible move and a great lesson for anyone in a workplace who's just trying to get ahead. You know, you don't ask, you don't get. And so she walks away. Greg and Joan come up and fucking they're talking about a French restaurant that they're going to go to. And Roger says, oh, I thought you didn't like French food or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg.
And he knows exactly.
He knows what
he's doing.
He knows what he's doing. He's trying to, you know, get a rise out of fucking Greg and, you know, imply the truth that, yes, I have taken her out to a nice French dinner, and then
if you know what I mean,
you know what
nudge,
I mean.
Nudge, wink,
you nudge,
wink.
Nudge. There's
backed up the milk.
Yeah,
truck.
Backed up that. Beep, beep, beep. All aboard! Time to go on the milk train. Sorry.
I thought that scene was very offensive to the Basque because she described Basque. A Basque restaurant and Roger said, I thought you didn't like French food. It's like, no,
oh, see, I missed
don't
that.
Don't say that in front of the separatists.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know it was a Basque.
They have their own culture and language.
Yeah. Put the lotion in the Basque. Sometimes I'm just trying to, like, you know, fill the space.
Mm-hmm. You don't say.
So they go into Dawn's office. Like, Greg is forceful about it. Like, hey, why don't you pour me a drink there, honey? And, you know, his, like, sweet college, you know, boy looks, you know, are kind of, you know, betrayed by his weird moment of forcefulness, you know, where it's just like, oh, hey, you know, he's been a nice guy thus far. He looks like a fucking pastor. And he's just like, hey, hey, Toots, go pour daddy a drink. And they go into Dawn's office and he sexually assaults her straight up. No holds barred. She's saying no multiple times. And he is doing the thing where he's like, it's clear you want this, which is not the case.
Don't do that.
Yeah. You know what? Don't. Mm-hmm. If you're even thinking that that's something that people want, they don't want that. That is not good. And you'll know by the struggling and them saying no and then them disassociating. And the Joan disassociation, I think, is the darkest part of this scene. Just like the kind of like, you know, because like for her, she is like factoring in all of the multiple factors, you know, the fact that they're engaged, getting married soon, that on paper he is a really good guy, that he's never done anything like this before, that
he stitches up Negro children.
Yes, exactly. And it's like you see her in the scene where she's talking to Peggy explaining, you know, how good Greg is. And it's so clear in that moment, she's like trying to convince herself, like, he's all these good things. These are the good things about him. Like, she's making in her head a pros and cons list about Greg. Yes. Like, you know,
and she's doing such a good acting job because she's saying all these nice things, but she is completely dead behind
yes.
the eyes, like just listing all of these things that are on paper good, yes. knowing,
yeah.
oh no, but he's also bad. He's a bad guy.
Right, yeah. right. But like, you know, no one can see the pros and cons list in her head. She's listing all the pros, but the cons is he just sexually assaulted her. And it is super heartbreaking and super great acting by Christina Hendricks. Apologies for all the previous milk truck stuff. You are more than the jugs of milk that I'd like to drink like a cat tied to a stick driven into frozen winter shit.
Why would the cat be tied
a
to a
pig in a cage on antibiotics? That's a Radiohead song called okay. Fitter and Happier.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, I don't think Greg's a good guy anymore. I'm going to say it. I'll be the one to say mm-hmm. it. I think he's a bad guy now.
Yeah, Greg, that's a big yikes from us.
Yeah, he's canceled in my book.
He is canceled. And finally, the Don stuff. We got to talk about it. This is the Don Draper show. He is the titular mad man. He's always mad all the time. So Don, we see him leaving a Greyhound somewhere near the ocean. I don't know where. Did they say where she lives? San Luis Obispo? Santa Barbara?
I for whatever reason, I thought San Diego. Maybe because I saw military guys at some point.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I feel like it's, for some reason, I thought north, not south. But he is.
I'm going to say San Clemente.
San Clemente. That could be right.
I don't know. I'm just making stuff up.
It sounds right. I don't know if she is in L.A. We could Google it, but I don't want to. So we see him approaching the door, and then we get to there's a bunch of flashbacks in this, and you see Anna Draper, you know, being lied to over and over, and he is trying to convince her. This is like the scene directly after.
It was supposed to be Long Beach, apparently, according to Google.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. This is like directly after she confronts him in the car dealership, and apparently he just like came over and said, hey, here's all this proof that I am Don Draper. And then she just like, you know, bats it all away and goes like, you're lying. I know you're lying. you're using also all of his information, you know, mm-hmm. like this is clearly you've stolen his identity. And he does finally admit that he is Dick Whitman.
I like the flashback for the information it gives, but I don't like that their strategy for making Dawn, for de-aging Dawn, is just to have him be like, oh, gee whiz.
Yeah. Oh, gee, golly, shucks. Wilkers.
I'm so much younger than I am in the other scenes.
Ooh, my hair is different.
Yeah, my hair's a little bit longer.
My suit doesn't fit as well. Yeah, I agree. It is like they could do a little bit more to differentiate between aged Dawn and Dawn a few years back, you know?
Because it's like Dawn's normal thing, or John Hamm's usual thing for Mad Men is that he's frowning all of the time.
Right.
Always with a furrowed brow. And then like young Dawn's thing is that he's always smiling and like
he's like happy-go-lucky. Yeah.
It reminded me of those pictures of when Bradley Cooper was playing the Elephant Man on Broadway with mm-hmm. like with no makeup. So he just had to like make his ugly face.
Yeah. I'm the Elephant Man. I'm the Elephant Man. Yeah, it is kind of strange. I will say that it's effective enough for me that I can get past it very easily. What I like about it is that he, as present day Dawn, doesn't smile unless he's like about to get pussy. And other than that, he doesn't have to smile. Whereas right. like Dawn,
yeah, he's only doing it when he's closing a deal, whether right. it's an advertising deal or a deal to right. Have some sex.
Right. And so, like, you know, the previous scenes where you see a younger Dawn, he is smiling because he's always, like, mid trying to sell someone a coat, you know, or sell yeah. them a car. Like, he's yeah. salesman Dawn. And so it's very, like, dog with his ears down type thing, you know. And he does a really good job of making a sort of a submissive face when he's smiling.
Also, like, Dawn being in love doesn't really square. I know this is younger Dawn. It still doesn't really square with his character. Like, he had already created a new life for himself at that point and, like, stole someone's identity. I don't know.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, but he's like a used car salesman, you yeah. know?
I actually do think it squares with him, because if you see him, he falls in love really easily, and this is, like, this is him falling in love with somebody who is neither he nor she are married. Yeah. You know what I mean? So she's, yeah. so the scene we're referring to is another flashback. It's Christmas and Dawn's hanging out with Anna and is like, gives her a present. Is like, also I have some news. I fell in love with this girl. Her name is Betty. She's blonde. She's a model. No big deal. Also, by the way, Anna Draper sitting there going, that's awesome. I'm so happy for you. I'm cool. She's so cool. I love her. She's so cool. So, like, you know, I do think that he has the ability to be in love. I think it squares. But so we flash forward to present day. She's teaching piano lessons. A kid is playing the Mountain King song.
He says it. He says the name of the episode.
He says the name of the episode. I whistle and point like Leo from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And Anna is, it's like there's this real contrast between Anna Draper when she is like, you know, where's my husband? Is he dead? You know, she's like dressed like a, you know, like a fucking 40s wife. And then Anna Draper in 1962, who is like, her hair is like fucking, it's
she's
not,
been living out there in California.
She's,
by that
she's
point.
In California. Mm-hmm.
She's dealing tarot cards.
She's dealing tarot cards. She's reading crystals. Bitch got a fucking horoscope business.
Talking yeah. about a Reiki guy.
Dude, she's got a yoni egg firmly inserted in that pussy. You know, she got one weird leg that she's like, you know, she's talking about
my sex leg.
Yeah, she's talking about ableism. She is cool girl now, and I think it works really well because of the contrast. But also, again, my whole issue is, and Anna Draper's character doesn't show up that much, so it's hard to really change from the Anna Draper you see here. Every time we visit Anna from this point forward, She has no issues with anyone else. She is this chill throughout the rest of the series, and that's fine. I enjoy it. I think she's a great character because she's a great sounding board for Don, but I also feel for this character because this is a character whose, you know, husband died in the war. And
never mentioned her once.
She is never remarried, and this really hot guy has taken his identity. And she, I think, gets money from him. I think it's clear that funds.
Well, yeah, he had to divorce her, according to the law.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so he's, like, funding her life and stuff like that. But it's also, you know, there's a little bit of it that's, like, you know, she's kind of one-dimensional in that way.
Also, she doesn't point out the fact that, like, yes, he's giving her alimony money, presumably, but if he wasn't there, she would also be getting like money from the government for having like a husband who died in a war,
right? Yeah or you know, like she's making good piano lesson money, I'm sure. Does Don get a cut of that? How's alimony fair? No, I'm just kidding.
I agree with what you're saying about the cool girl thing. My issue with this storyline is Dawn walking into the ocean at the end. Like, I feel like I've seen the person walks into, maybe it's because I grew up in California, but like the narrative metaphor of someone like walking into the waves, I feel like I've seen it too many times and it has ceased doing anything for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say future episodes will touch on the idea of walking into the ocean in ways that are very, that make me okay with this moment, because I do feel like if you are someone who is from the East Coast, and I base this on all of the miserable people I've met who are from there, and mm-hmm. they go to
all of our many tri-state goblins.
Yes, that... all of our many tri-state goblins who, you know, are, they dream of California as the land of milk and honey. They come out here and they all are just like, I'm gonna strip off my clothes and run into the ocean. It's like, you know, pretending that you're the one holding up the Leaning Tower of Pisa. It's a thing that you do when you're in, you know, when in Rome, right? So I look at that as kind of like, for him, he's like, oh, this is a really beautiful scene for me, almost self-consciously doing it. Mm-hmm. But yes, the show doesn't play it out like that. It's almost played as like, look at this symbol for freedom for him.
Yeah, he's run out of land. He's manifested destiny. And
that's
now,
right.
What does he do?
Now he's got his destiny. So yeah, she's cool. He's doing a therapy session with him, and he's talking about, he's like, I keep scratching at my life trying to get in. Vince, you wanted me to get that clip, so I got it. Here it is.
So what are you going to do?
I don't know. I have been watching my life. It's right there. I keep scratching at it, trying to get into it.
Yeah. So he's like a dog outside trying to get inside.
That's
know what
right.
I mean?
And now he's in the doghouse with Betty.
Yeah. And she's a bitch. But like symbolically.
I get it because of the dog.
Dog.
I get it.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyways, that scene happens. We see a few more flashbacks. Dawn, you know, had to ask for a divorce at one point. She is totally cool with it. She's cool with everything, guys.
Yeah, doesn't not even a second thought. Just like, oh yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, well, I didn't even think about that. Anyways, I'll do anything for you, man who stole my husband's identity, who every time I see you, I think of the love that I lost in Korea. Also, man who I would have never known had I not tracked his ass down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, you know, it's crazy, dog. It's crazy. Dawn is helping fix a chair. Anna's doing a tarot card reading. The tarot card reading is interesting because, once again, it's like, you know, it's like he is looking at the tarot cards individually on the pieces of paper, and he's just like, oh man, this is bad. And she's like, no, but it's good. And then he's like, no, but doesn't this mean that? And he's like, yeah, it does if you're a negative piece of shit. And I'm just like, she truly is too cool. Like,
it reminded me of, what was that? Was it like a Leon tweet where he was like, the tarot card dealer pulls a card with a picture of a guy who looks exactly like me piloting a hot air balloon into into some power lines? Me, is that bad?
Yeah, it is. It's very much that. And she has got this like very positive disposition and is like, the only thing that's keeping you unhappy is your belief that you are alone. And it is, you know, sort of true, sort of not true. True enough for the character, true enough for Taro. Then Dawn walks into the ocean.
That scene also felt very modern. That felt like something that could have happened in an apartment in Silver Lake.
Absolutely.
Yesterday, where some, you know, some cool girl is trying to do a tarot reading for some guy who's smoking a cigarette and acting like he doesn't care, but he's also like, okay, but what is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't care. But like, what is it?
Right, right, exactly. And
sorry, yeah. I have to correct the record. That was actually a tweet from former guest Stefan Heck.
Oh, okay.
The tweet is, mysterious old lady flips tarot card, revealing a dude who looks exactly like me flying a hot air balloon into power lines. Me, is that good?
Yeah. It's a great tweet, and it's a great episode. Okay. Is there a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about?
We didn't talk about when Peggy tells everybody she got the office.
Oh yeah,
that's a really funny scene because they immediately all turn on her and are like shouting over each other. Mm-hmm. And I think it's Kinsey who says, why don't you just put on Don Draper's pants while you're at it? I love that line.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it because it's also
like, Paul, you weren't even here, bro. You were on vacation. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Vince, scene, least favorite.
We didn't talk about the fact that like this entire storyline with Peggy taking the office was kicked off by a bitchy copy guy who didn't like fact that people were disrespecting the copy machine.
You gotta respect the Xerox.
That was great, especially after she just like landed this fucking account and he's just like, listen woman, you're rubbing your titties against the machine and I don't like it. I love that scene. It's very good. If I had to give this...
Your snail trails are making the paper jam.
Yeah. I'm trying to read memos, and there's a smudge where your pussy juice is.
Were you trying to get on top? Women these days.
Women
always
keep
trying
to get
on
top.
Top.
If anything,
in my day, they rode the copy machine from the bottom.
That's right. You got to get mounted by the Xerox, like the Mountain King. Well, we've had fun. If I had to give this episode a letter grade, I think I'd give it a B+. What are you giving it?
Tough choice. I think I'm going to give it a solid B+.
Oh, wow. And Brent, what would you give this episode if you had to give it?
You know, like I said, kind of a tough one out of context, but some good stuff, some bad stuff. I guess I'd say B+.
Oh, my God. It's a great episode. It's a B+ episode of Mad Men and an A++++++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Brent Flyberg, thank you for coming out from behind the scenes to tell us
happy to be here
the things about Mad Means. Can you tell us where to find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Brent Flyberg. You listen to my podcast. It's Oh Hell Yeah. It's available on all the services, so check that out.
Okay, check out all of that. That will all be in the episode description, and I know this because Brent writes the episode descriptions.
You're damn right.
Thank you for coming on, and we love you. Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken. Patreon.com/Fraudcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince, we have two this week. One of them is a redo. That's right. You know how I always tell people,
why do we have to redo?
Because this was someone who wanted a name, but he forgot that his name on Patreon was it was based on another podcast that he listens to, where he doesn't matter. He said, "I'm sorry, my name is not actually Portmanteau Cutter. Is there any way you could do a shout out of my name?" And his name is Ben Simon. Vince, can you give Ben Simon a new prep school name?
Yeah, we call this guy the Chipmunk.
Oh, I know it immediately. Simon and the Chipmunks.
It's Alvin, but Simon was one of the Chipmunks.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That'd be crazy, though, if Simon did some sort of coup.
Yeah, just like pull the Duck Phillips.
Yeah, hey, Dave, let's kick this Alvin guy out.
Yeah, we merged with Chip and Dale, and it's going to be Simon range. And the Chipmunks.
Yeah, don't worry, we're getting rid of Alvin, but it'll be me, Theodore, and Chip and Dale. So yeah, that's his name. Thank you so much. What did you say, Chipmunk?
Yes. Yeah, the Chipmunk.
That's right. And finally, Joshua Orsi.
Hey, we call this guy freaking J.J. Abrams. I don't know. All I can think of is his favorite screenwriter, Roberto Orsi.
Oh, well, that's okay. That's actually a really good reason to call him J.J. Abrams. I thought it was just because he had a J in his first name.
Oh,
I was like,
no,
that
but
seems lazy.
Yeah,
I like
it. That they're not lazy.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams, thank you, Joshua Orsi, or as I call him, Porcy Coffee Morny. I'm having fun.
Sure.
Those are the shout outs for this week. And you too can get yourself shout outs if you join the Patreon, patreon.com/Frotcast. If you haven't heard your name, by the way, please email us, broadcast@gmail.com, and let us know, hey, I gave money, but I haven't heard my name. Patreon.com/Frotcast. Frotcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all. Yeah, bitch, suck the dick. E12 Season 2. Betty's feeling blue. Buy Sally some shoes. Daddy won't be back soon. They're having marital trouble. E12 Season 2. Campbell yells at Trude. Clear cells under review. Peggy gets her own office. Whoa, good for her. Suck on my balls. Eat on my dick. Gonna put my dick in your dick. Then gonna take more dicks in my butt. E12 Season 2. Too great, sex is new. Thinks Joan has been untrue. So he sexually assaults his fiance. Whoa, super dark turn. Yo, what up, bitch? My name is John Lennon. Flap, 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 bitch. I'm in heaven. I got shot in the head and the mouth in the chest. And you know all about the rest. You see, I was shot by a guy who was hired by George Harrison. Whoa, fuck. E12 Season 2. Sterling Cooper merges into Putnam Powell and Loeb. Matt Leave. Sucky fucky do. Whoa, sucky do. Yeah, sucky. You know what? Fuck you. What am I doing? Alright, you know what? Yo, what up, bitch? It's John Lennon again. Flap, flap, flap. I got killed by George Harrison. Shot me because I stole all his songs. None of this is true. But wouldn't that be crazy if that's what happened? Ow, ow, ow. My dick, dick, dick. You fucking moron.
Now I'm recording. Beep, beep. Ow.
Idiot.
My cock hole.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.